It is Second Helping on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend Brent Beard, a longtime college football analyst. Brent, of course, also a voter for the most prestigious honor in all of collegiate football, the Heisman Trophy. Brent, most recently with First Coast News down there in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, a lot to talk about as, again, we are live on this Tuesday evening, maybe a day early, right? Day or two early with the program this week. Got some conflicts coming up later in the week, but still wanted to get a show on the channel for the viewers and followers out there. So here we go. And Brent, you are fresh from the Florida-Georgia game, or Georgia-Florida, depending on your stance on those type of things, I guess. And we talked about this a little bit before the show, and we'll get into more of it probably where Georgia's concerned in our Week 11 preview. But anticipated a really competitive game, and that's what we had Saturday. But the team that has the culture of winning won, and the team that has been mired in losing too much did not.
No question about it. Good to be on with you, my friend, as always. And I enjoyed being at the game. The weather was perfect, frankly, and we're grateful for some football weather that's going on too. But again, Georgia had the opportunity to show who they are, and they did. And now Georgia. Georgia has this innate ability, Trav, to sleepwalk through the first half. And the first half was 10-10, and then they kind of flexed their muscle out. And we're not saying they won by 3 or 4 touchdowns, but they still were the dominant team. They're 8-2 against Florida with Kirby Smart. And during that time, Florida's averaged 17 points a game in the last decade. I tell you another thing, Georgia's trailed in 5 of their 6 SEC games, but are 5-1, even though they trailed in league play. So, the Dogs, they have, many times recently, won the game, and they proved who they were when the game was on the line.
Yeah, I mean, Florida had it essentially where they wanted it midway through the fourth quarter. The lead, had a 4th-and-1. Mm-hmm. Could have taken maybe 3 there, but that only puts you up 6. I didn't mind the decision to go on 4th-and-1 there. And as we heard going into the season, this Florida offensive line, man, going to be one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines in the country. You got Jaden Ball at the running back position, and you hand it to your guy behind that offensive line, and Georgia stuffs him. And then Georgia proceeds to go, I think it was 82 yards the other way, Chauncey Bowens with 36 yards to give the Dogs the lead. And that was pretty much the ball game. And we'll get more into Georgia coming up here in a little bit, but also want to talk some college football playoff reveal, the initial. Reveal of the college football playoff projections just hot off the press. Brent, I'm going to bring that up right now. There it is. There you see it. And from the SEC perspective, two teams right now, if you kicked it off, would have first round byes, the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Texas A&M Aggies. But then you'd still have two other teams, in the Georgia Bulldogs and the Ole Miss Rebels. So four right now, four SEC teams in that initial reveal.
When you spread it out, you've even got more than that with Texas at 11, Oklahoma is at 12. If people haven't seen this yet, I mean, Vanderbilt is 16 in the initial CFP ratings, which – that if they could bronze the moment, they need to do that, don't they, bud?
Yeah, imagine if we were already at a 16-team field, seeing Vanderbilt up there. But look, we got Indiana. We can talk about Vanderbilt. You got Indiana sitting here as a 2-seed.
That's right. You know? Really?
3 or 4 years ago, I don't think anybody saw that coming. But yeah, and look, the Big Ten with 3 teams in this initial reveal of the 12-team field. A couple from the Big 12 in BYU and Texas Tech. And this is where we got to talk about how a lot of this is still going to be sorted out in head-to-heads.
Yeah.
Now, BYU, Texas Tech, they play this weekend. So, you know, that's going to answer some of that, at least initially. And it just underscores the point, too. We still got such a long way to go. No, when you get into this initial reveal, I always just refer to it as a TV show. It's good TV.
Yeah.
And it's a fun conversation starter. And it's something we're talking about very early on in our show this week. But that's all it is right now. Still so much to do and so much to take care of.
Well, and Trav, too, how about Ole Miss, a team we haven't talked about yet? That is early on, they're number six with the Citadel
this week.
Florida and Mississippi State. So they're in pretty good shape right now.
I would say of the SEC teams right now,
you would
want to be the lowest seeded in this 12 of those six in terms of your college football playoff viability for that route that you just outlined there. I mean, Georgia still got Texas and Athens, still got Georgia Tech. Down the road, Alabama goes LSU, Oklahoma, back-to-back weeks coming up. Those games are in Tuscaloosa, of course, but still got to go to Auburn to cap the regular season. And then Texas A&M, now looks a lot more inviting after what Texas has done here the last couple of weeks, especially with Arch Manning at the quarterback position. So, again, so much to sort out. But we do know this, a lot of this is going to go through the Southeastern Conference. Yes. And as we look ahead to week 11, Brent, we're going to get started with that noon Eastern kickoff. Maybe not the allure that it's had in some weeks to this point of the 2025 season. But Georgia, it's an intriguing matchup because Mississippi State has to be feeling a lot better about itself after finally getting a league win under Jeff Lebby. And it's been a pretty interesting gauntlet for the Georgia Bulldogs to this point. Now they got to go on the road after a tough win over the Florida Gators last Saturday.
And they're in pretty decent shape. I think they were as healthy as they could be in the beginning of the Florida game. So that I think that made a big difference for them. All the way. I mean, look, Georgia did what they needed to do. Chauncey Bowens, as you mentioned, had some important runs in the game. I think at this point, Georgia is playing pretty well. Gunnar Stockton has been steady. I mean, you could argue he may not be great, but he doesn't turn the ball over much. I mean, he's got like two picks on the year, which is really tremendous. Their tackling has improved overall. So, again, I give State a lot of credit, too, for where they are. They're close. I know they're not happy about how things are going, but they've got six different wide receivers or players who've caught 40 plus yards in yard pass so far this year. So, it's been slow for Jeff Lebby, but he's done a pretty good job overall. And from progress from year one to year two, I think has been very helpful. But it would be very interesting what will it travel Georgia on the road, cowbells and all that. I think this is a maturity game for them, is it not?
It is. And it feels like they've already shown that maturity to us. Mississippi State, though, big, big win last week, and a lot of that had to do with Arkansas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. The Hogs have done well offensively. I give them a lot of credit. But defensively, that let's be honest, they're still a mess. And again, Trav, what they do at the end of the year would be one of the more interesting things that go on with the SEC.
Yeah, that coaching carousel that we're going to sort of weave into this show on a Tuesday night, Arkansas with 193 yards and penalties in that loss to Mississippi State. So
how do you do that?
For about 250 in your Arkansas and you give away about 193 of that in penalties. Right. That's how you stay winless in the Southeastern Conference, which is the case right now with the Bobby Petrino led Razorbacks. I like Georgia as much as anything, because I do trust them from a psyche and a mindset perspective. And at the end of the day, they still have the better players. But you know, look, Mississippi State, one win away, Brent, from bowl eligibility.
Yes.
The problem with that is I think Mississippi State goes Georgia this week, Missouri, and Ole Miss to finish the season. So that sixth win might be a little bit elusive for Levy and the Maroons here down the stretch. We talked about it a little bit here just a second ago. The Citadel traveling from Charleston, South Carolina, over to Oxford, Mississippi. Ole Miss Rebels catching a break here. Sort of a bye week with a pulse. I like to refer to these sort of matchups. You used to get a lot of these in these November weekends in the Southeastern Conference. Ole Miss, as you outlined earlier, this is part of a finishing stretch that feels like Lane Kiffin and his team, the heavy lifting's already been done.
I would agree with that. And again, you have surprises on the year. You know, certainly they've solidified their quarterback situation. I mean, they can run the ball when they want to. I still think the defense has been pretty solid for them. Trev, I'm curious what you think about this. You remember last year, Ole Miss was we thought they had everything going for them. Then they go to Gainesville, and I don't know if I want to say they laid an egg as much as Florida just played well in that game. I'm not – are they more mature this year to keep that from happening, I wonder?
I thought last week was a maturity win for Ole Miss in the game against South Carolina, because it wasn't as shiny and flashy, I'm sure, as maybe Lane Kiffin would have liked it. But I think even from his perspective, I didn't think he had a great game against Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, leading the way offensively and some of the decision-making there. It felt sort of like, look at me a little too much, or hold my beer and watch this. He had the better team against South Carolina playing at home, and he sort of let it play out that way. And, by the way, when Keon Lacy runs for nearly 170 yards, it doesn't really matter if you go 1 for 11 on third downs like Ole Miss did against South Carolina. You know, there's a lot of luxury in knowing that you can hand it to a guy like Keon Lacy, who's been better than I think a lot of people realize. I'll be interested, though, to your point, to see how still Ole Miss handles the situation with Florida coming up in a couple of weeks. The game will be in Oxford this time around. So from that perspective, you feel like the Rebels should be in a good spot. But, you know, we talked about that before. I think to this point, Ole Miss has checked the maturity box.
Yes.
Last year, as you said, the Florida game was late in the season. Ole Miss was beat up. And Florida, it really caught Florida at the wrong time last year. Florida was getting healthier and playing well, in salvation mode of Billy Napier. It was a tough spot for that one, in Gainesville. Hey, let's talk about top 20 matchup in Como on Saturday afternoon. Texas A&M going to Columbia, Missouri as a 7-point favorite. Missouri, Matt Zollers, the true freshman, going to get the start at the quarterback position for Mizzou after the latest injury for the Tigers at that position. Obviously, Bo Prabula out for this game. I guess some good news for Prabula, though, in that he did have a dislocated ankle, but it didn't involve a fracture, which is typically the case. So I don't know if they're entirely ruling him out for the rest of the season, but what we do know is it'll be a young guy behind center for Eli Drinkwitz against that Texas A&M defense this week.
And listen, I'm curious, how impressed are you with Zollers? I mean, they ended up what, between the goal line and the 1 yard line, but basically
about a foot short at Vanderbilt.
Absolutely. So, and you know, for I mean, to me, I give them a lot of credit that they're pretty deep at quarterback, although two out of the three, you know, have been have basically been hurt, but still, A&M on the road, I think they will be mature enough to be able to win this game. But I mean, but Trav, to me, the biggest question for Missouri is going to be, is Drinkwith going to be the coach of Missouri when we're talking a year from now?
Yeah. I mean, he's being linked obviously with all the major openings, yes, whether it's, Florida, LSU, Penn State.
Yeah.
And the other coach in this matchup,
absolutely,
Mike Elko. He's a Penn State guy.
Yeah. You
know, and he's been talked about with that Penn State job too. Mm-hmm. So both of these coaches getting some burn in the carousel buzz, as it just continues to rev up with the departure now of Hugh Freeze also from Auburn that we'll get into here in a little bit as well. But A&M, the things they do well, travel well.
Yes.
They play defense, yes, and they're a physical line of scrimmage type of team. I think that makes them a little bit Teflonish to the upsets in this type of situation. So unless Zollers is able to really play beyond his years.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that was one of those four or five star type recruits. He isn't, you know, some walk on from St. Louis or something. Yeah. I mean, this guy was highly coveted as a recruit. So he has a lot of upside to him. It may be a little bit much this early to expect him. Ahmad Hardy, that run game's going to have to be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Missouri's defense can hang in there for a while with Texas A&M. Because A&M in some ways offensively is kind of like what Vanderbilt was. Mm-hmm. Probably a little bit more explosive. That's where A&M's kind of changed the game this year is with KC Concepcion and those receivers. They can hurt you in all three phases, just like they did their last time out when they blitzed LSU in the second half in Baton Rouge. Let's talk about, speaking of the Vanderbilt Commodores and speaking of the Auburn Tigers, it is another interim situation in the SEC, Brent, this time after Hugh Freeze is relieved of his duties by Auburn athletic director John Cohen following a 10-3 loss at home to the Kentucky Wildcats. Sort of like Brian Kelly before him, that sort of abysmal performance on your home field. And how many home losses in a row now is that for Auburn, by the way? Isn't it like three
or
more? Have lost to Georgia, lost to Missouri, lost to Kentucky. That just doesn't happen in a lot of years for the Auburn football team. But the decision made to move on from Hugh Freeze, I know here on the show you had sort of been forecasting that for some time, and it definitely came to fruition. DJ Durkin going to be the interim. Second place in the SEC, he's been the interim. That might be a good trivia question. DJ Durkin has been the interim at two places in the SEC. Florida being the other one. I think he got the nod when Muschamp was let go.
Yeah.
So Vanderbilt, was that a CFP extinguishing loss for Vanderbilt at Texas last week, Brent?
Well, and we said a few minutes ago, Vanderbilt in as far as the college football playoff rankings are, I mean, they're 16. Mm-hmm. You know, they run the table and have a few losses. How close could they get to that 12 mark? Now, if we were having 16 teams this year instead of 12, which we may have next year, that would make a humongous difference. But look, with what Vandy has been able to do this year, I think has been amazing. I mean, they're still alive, that they could get in, but very possibly. And I think they'll probably beat Auburn at this point. The game's at Vanderbilt. So that will be a nice win for them too. There are just some things about this Auburn team. And five SEC losses, they've scored six total touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And you know, the good and the bad for them, there are three teams in America, and only three, that haven't allowed more than 24 points in a game this year. Ohio State, Indiana, and Auburn's a third one. Can you believe that? The Auburn defense has been salty, but they can't go on offense. That's their problem.
No, you give up 241 yards of offense to Kentucky and you lose at home.
Yeah.
And in large part because you only had 240 yards of offense.
Yeah, really.
In the game. And you go to Ashton Daniels there at the quarterback position, and that just reeked of a fire drill on most snaps on Saturday night against Kentucky. It was really tough to watch. And if Hugh wasn't at the end of year three going to have the offense headed in the right direction, as you said, Auburn essentially wasted a championship caliber defense this year.
They really did.
Just set a match to it. But just the non-improvement on the offensive side of the ball, I didn't anticipate that with you. I wasn't sure Hugh would be the guy at Auburn 3 or 4 years in, but I didn't think the offense, would be the biggest reason why, he would end up being out of a gig. So tough to figure, but Auburn back in the market, John Summerall, the Tulane head coach, being linked to that job, it sounds like a good bit, Brent. Any other names maybe that you're hearing as of yet that might perk up some interest?
Yeah, you mentioned Summerall. Now, the list I've got here is Kenny Dillingham is listed first. Then you've got Summerall, James Franklin. I'm not sure about that one. Brent Key. I'll tell you one thing, Trav. Brent Key would be a great hire for Auburn. Could you blast him out of Atlanta right now in Georgia Tech? I'm not sure that you could, but we've got Brent Key is 15-2. Jimbo Fisher Travis 15-2 also. How about that?
Yeah, what's Petrino on that list? I mean, go ahead and throw him on there. Brent Key would be almost sort of it. Brent Key would feel like a retro hire for Auburn.
Yeah, he would be.
Brent Key would feel a little bit like a Patrick Fain Dye.
He would
hire.
Yeah.
Physicality back in the program with Brent Key, an Alabama guy before heading to Georgia Tech. That's the question there, too. Do you pry him, as you said, away from his alma mater there on the flats in Atlanta? It'll be interesting to see how that sort of unfolds for the Auburn Tigers. But for now, they get Diego Pavia. And what about Diego in the fourth quarter against Texas last Saturday in Austin? 34-10 game, and Vanderbilt proceeds to score 21 and has a great shot at the recovery on the onside, down three.
Yeah.
And just can't jump on the football inbounds. So Texas able to hang on, but never a dull moment with Diego. Well, and the Vanderbilt Commodores.
And Trev, this is worth asking this question. If they would have gotten the ball back, would they have scored and won the game?
I wouldn't have bet against it right there.
Because no, I wouldn't either.
It felt like that sort of landslide sequence that was unfolding right before our very eyes. They weren't slowing Vanderbilt down. Now, they did a good job against Diego for three quarters. They sacked him six times. Forced a turnover from him on a fumble there early in the game. I thought Sark early in the game basically said, here's our fast, big, strong guys out on the perimeter. Let's see if you can tackle them. Let's see if you can get off some blocks. Vanderbilt in the back end wasn't able to do it. And that's how, you also preserve Arch Manning that way, coming out of concussion protocol. You don't get him hit. You keep him working the quick game to the perimeter. And if Vanderbilt's not going to make a tackle, you don't get away from it. But it sets up pretty well for Vandy moving forward, as you said. I think it's Auburn this week in Nashville, then Kentucky in Nashville. Yeah. And then you do go on the road to Tennessee. How about if Vanderbilt goes to Tennessee and it looks like a road game at the Vols is what stands between Vandy and the CFP?
Oof. Yeah, really. Wow. Yeah. Well, I give Vanderbilt incredible credit. It's going to be interesting to see if they can keep the coaching staff. They've been rumored for a lot of jobs too, but Trav, right now, look, And I can understand Mike Elko getting coach of the year, but boy, oh boy, that Vandy staff deserves a lot of votes for that too.
They do. I think Clark Lee, if I'm considering him, I would be considering him at Penn State or one of these other places in the same light I'd be considering Eli Drinkwitz, in that, can he bring his offensive coordinator with him?
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
If Clark Lee's going to bring Tim Beck, okay, yeah, that sounds better to me than,
no doubt,
no, Tim Beck's going to stay behind or be, yeah, somewhere else, and Clark Lee's going to have to figure it out, mm-hmm, you know, offensively, yeah, because that's, yeah, why a place like Penn State's in the market in large part is because, no, of the offense. And the same thing with Kirby Moore as the offensive coordinator, mm-hmm, at Missouri. Mm-hmm. If I can't have him with Drink,
yeah, yeah,
I don't know if Drink's at the very top of my list. And Elko too, with Colin Klein, very, mm-hmm, good offensive coordinator, yeah, young guy. You wonder, K-State struggling right now. Yeah. Colin Klein's a K-State guy.
Mm-hmm.
Could there be a change in Manhattan, the little Big Apple? And maybe we see Colin Klein back at his alma mater in a head coaching role. Let's talk about primetime on Saturday. LSU, another interim, mm-hmm, situation. This time Frank Wilson, yes, in his debut for the Tigers with Brian Kelly out. Alabama and LSU coming off open date sprint. 10 points Alabama favor. And I understand it's a tumultuous time, yeah, in Baton Rouge. But still a very talented LSU team. Alabama's had a knack of seemingly being in close games in the SEC each and every week. So I'm not really anticipating anything different for Alabama, yeah, even with the change at LSU. I guess what I'm saying is 10 points seems like a lot to me,
yeah,
in this game.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's very true. Now, some things for LSU. Frank Wilson, the interim. Tyree Adams is out against Alabama. Kerryus Kern is questionable. So there's a big question at left tackle for them. We'll be interested to see how Blake Baker does against Alabama too. If folks haven't heard, Verge Osbury is now the AD. They made that decision, I believe, today, as a matter of fact, Trav.
So they removed the interim. He's the permanent.
Yeah, he is. Okay. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, you know, this is kind of interesting. And I've been asked about this today, and I kind of brushed it off, and now it appears to be some truth to it. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but a couple of names have been brought up for LSU. And these are coordinators: Glenn Schumann of Georgia, the D coordinator, and Brian Hartline, the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. I would kind of think LSU would go the conventional head coach route. I'm curious what you think of that. Both those guys have done pretty good jobs. Trav, would they be ready for a job like an LSU, I wonder?
Yeah, Schumann, you know, he's been mentioned several times, been sort of on that Dan Lanning track, yeah, it feels like.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I could see Schumann being in the mix for a P4. I don't know how that would resonate with that fan base.
I don't either.
I don't think it would say have the same impact as if, let's say, you did this with Kirby Smart when he was the defense coordinator at Alabama. Yeah. I think yeah, that's a different deal if,
sure,
you bring in Kirby,
yeah,
as compared to Glenn Schumann. I think Glenn Schumann's a good coach, good coordinator.
Yeah, yeah.
Might do a great job, mm-hmm, somewhere like LSU. But I'm with you. I'd be a little bit surprised. I think offensively, that's what most LSU fans are probably going to be interested in, because it feels like the defense hasn't been great really before Blake Baker got there.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm, this Joe Sloan thing, especially this year, was not good at all. So they're going to want some close to guarantees as you can get on that side of the ball moving forward. And I like some of those guys in the SEC. We've given the coordinators love for a couple of weeks,
yeah,
on this channel. And we've worked throughout the SEC and talked about a lot of those guys. I think for LSU this week in this game, and Bama Bob here in the show chat, he's thinking right along with me. He wants to know about Whit Weeks in the middle of that LSU defense. He's been out for about a month now with an ankle injury. I believe Frank Wilson yesterday or today described Whit Weeks, Bob, as questionable.
Yeah.
They're going to try to ramp him up throughout the week and see where he's at. But early in the week, he's questionable. Remember, we don't get player availability reports until tomorrow.
Yeah.
It'll be tomorrow when you start to get those for the league games involving conference teams. So it's a Tuesday, but yeah, we did hear that about Weeks. And I think that's huge because not just what he brings in terms of production to the middle of that defense, but it feels very much like he's a heartbeat kind of guy as far as energy and just sort of what the rest of that team feeds off of.
I tell you, when you look at this from Alabama, this really gets your attention. Bama's offense has scored on 33 of 34 trips inside the red zone. Travis, that's really unbelievable, particularly when you think about having a first-year quarterback, basically in Ty Simpson. But it really shows you why he is considered for the Heisman Trophy. And what, to me, the really amazing thing to that is I'm not going to say they can't run the ball, but this is not a typical tie team as far as being able to run the ball. But we kind of got a clue. I know you mentioned this, that they would be pass heavy this year with that coaching staff, and they have been. But I've still got to believe, Trav, by the time they get to the Auburn game, they want to be able to run the ball better than they have.
Yeah, and a lot of times you hear about red zone numbers like that, like Alabama 33 out of 34 in terms of scoring on trips inside opponents 20. And it can be a little bit misleading because really what you want to know is touchdown conversion rate.
Absolutely.
It's great that you score inside the red zone, but if you're kicking field goals half the time you're down there, that's not a great stat. But to your point about Alabama not being a great at all run team on offense, they are still converting 76.5% of their red zone trips for touchdowns.
Yeah.
And I think that also points back to Ryan Grubb, offensive coordinator, because he has schemed and called around a run game that isn't particularly great. You saw it against South Carolina, whether that's lining up guys at the quarterback position from other spots and then getting the ball to to Ty Simpson to throw it, or Wildcat, you name it.
Yeah.
The concern you have for Alabama in terms of that run game and how it relates to things like the red zone is sustainability in the month of November, because these next two defenses, LSU and Oklahoma, are going to be capable of putting a dent in that 76.5% touchdown conversion rate. Yeah. So a lot of the story left to be told for this Alabama team. I said it on the channel earlier in the week. This Alabama team in some way reminds me of 89 Alabama.
Yes.
I know that's dating me because that wasn't a particularly stout football team. But you had a wizard in Homer Smith back then.
Yeah,
sure coordinating did. That offense with Gary Hollinsworth at the quarterback position and doing some really innovative stuff when you think about it being the late 1980s. I feel like Ryan Grubb has done a similar type of job. And for Alabama in 89, it wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they ran up on a sturdy football team on its home field late in that regular season. And they paid the price for that. We'll see. I wonder at this point, can you really just flip the switch with your run game? Because basically, you are who you are from a personnel perspective, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Well, and Trav, to your point, Jam Miller's the number one running back with 308 yards.
Yeah.
Kevin Riley is two. Jeremy Bernard is three.
I think the next couple of games are going to be Daniel Hill kind of games.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this about the bye week for Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
We get caught up in, well, is Quay Rousseau going to be back this week? You know, he's been out for an extended period with an injury. You know, and that's important at some point to get him back as an edge defender on that defense. But there's guys who have been playing through stuff.
Yeah.
Like Jam Miller, initially the collarbone, then concussion. That bye week is especially valuable to guys like that. They had some guys beat up coming out of that South Carolina game. So that came at a good time for them, I think. I feel like Daniel Hill is a bigger back, 240 pounds. Just get him going with direct runs. Don't try to get into pulling linemen too much or anything like that, because other than Parker Brailsford, they're not especially adept at moving linemen. Brailsford is elite when it comes to that. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but that's how he sort of compensates for that. I would just like to see more just direct runs. Embrace that you're not going to be explosive in the run game. They're not.
Yeah.
They don't have those kind of backs right now either. But just direct runs, you know, and nothing that takes a lot of time to develop. Get a guy like Daniel Hill going downhill as fast as you can, and, you know, see if you can at least be more efficient in the run game, because they're not averaging really close to 4 yards per carry in conference play, I don't think.
No. And Jim Miller's averaging 3.8. Yeah. But look, to your point, for a team like Alabama, Trav, isn't Witten third and three be a lot more important for them with this lack of a running game than third and nine?
Well, just second and six, too.
Yeah.
Second and seven.
Yeah.
You know, the concern you have for Alabama with these next two, really three SEC defenses, because you can put Auburn in this too, is they can find themselves in second and 12 a lot.
Yeah, and absolutely.
They've already dealt with that this season, and they've overcome it a good bit.
Yeah.
But, boy, if you keep touching that hot stovetop with teams like LSU coming up and Oklahoma, you will get burned.
Yeah,
you will get burned eventually. But I like Alabama in the game Saturday. I just think it's going to – it has the potential to take all 60 minutes. I really believe that. Yeah. I know you worry about the mindset for LSU with the change. I don't. I don't get the sense that that roster was all that crestfallen when they got the news that Brian Kelly was out. And I think sort of like Florida, from a fan base perspective, the folks over in Louisiana are hopeful that the offense, if anything, will improve now.
Yeah.
That Sloan's out of there. And there's still plenty of playmakers, man. Sure. We can talk about Alabama this, Alabama that, what Alabama needs to do. Alabama, first and foremost, has got to account for Caden Durham and Harlan Berry Saturday night in the run game. Okay. Now, what I do like for the Alabama defense this week is, unlike Lenore Sellers, you don't really have to worry about that with Darren Hessmeyer.
No.
And even Oklahoma, there's some glass half full with that matchup with the Oklahoma offense. You worry, you're going to worry about John Mateer with his legs.
Sure.
But I don't think Oklahoma is going to be able to hurt Alabama throwing the football like LSU might be able to do it. Xavier Thomas, Tre'Dez Green at 6'7", the matchups you can get with him, Berrien Brown, Aaron Anderson. And there's still some legit dudes. Now, you talked about it a little bit with that offensive line and the concerns they got there.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it's going to start for LSU in terms of concerns on Saturday night, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's keep it moving. On Saturday night, we talked about LSU and Alabama from Bryant Denny Stadium. You're also going to have Saturday night, Florida traveling to Kentucky in the SEC Network game. Florida as a 3.5-point favorite. Now, you know, Kentucky with a touchdown win over Auburn on the road. I guess that tells you what Vegas thought more so of maybe Auburn
really
than anything else, with Florida coming off a tough loss to the rival Georgia Bulldogs, but still a favorite in Lexington.
Yeah. Well, the and how quickly can Florida get things together here? I don't know if they can make a bowl game. I mean, that certainly is a worthy goal if they can try to do that. Well, we're talking about the coaching situation in a minute. We mentioned earlier Dallas Wilson. Eugene Wilson had a really good game.
He did.
Against Georgia, 9 receptions, 121 yards along that way, too. And Trent, the thing we didn't talk about a few minutes ago or maybe you need to emphasize a little bit more, when the game was on the line, Florida could not get 2 yards on 2 downs inside the Georgia 20.
Yep. Yep.
And DJ Lagway had a touchdown and underthrew Sturdivant terribly. So there were 3 chances to make winning plays, and none of them worked.
You know, without the benefit of a real off season from start to finish, really from start to anything for DJ Lagway, there's been games where I wonder about stamina with him.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Can he physically maintain the level required? Mm-hmm. And you don't typically think about that with quarterbacks, you know, like you think about that with a 350-pound offensive lineman or a defensive tackle. But there's times where I think, is he out of gas, you know, by the end of the third quarter?
Sure.
And I know he's about 240. DJ Lagway, I've said it many times already, how he needs a full off season coming up, whether it's at Florida or wherever it is.
Yes.
To from a development standpoint, and he does. He also needs to get down to about 220 pounds.
No question.
I think that's been a byproduct, an unfortunate yield of the issues he had from a health perspective going into the offseason, and then apparently right on through this most recent offseason. But, you know, say this for Mark Stoops, right? If this is it for him, one of the things he did rectify or at least nip was that, what was it, like a 30 straight wins Florida had over Kentucky at one point or something like that? That's one of those resume things that however this goes for Mark Stoops moving up here in a little bit, he'll have that one in his back pocket too.
Oh, yeah. A couple of quick things. I'm curious what you have thought about Jaden Baugh. I tell you one thing, Baugh is tough. And Trev, I think he needs to get more. They need to find more ways to get him the ball. And I'll say this: look, Mark Stoops may be fired at the end of the year, but there was a long embrace between he and his athletic director after they won that game, and which made me think: could he be back for another year?
You know, I still get the sense that it may be more his decision than anybody else's.
I agree.
As far as kind of how that goes moving forward. But, you know, in this game, Florida, after the Georgia game, you sort of had this sense of, well, you know, now it'll pretty much be Florida State and that's it. But when you look at this Florida schedule.
Really?
This is kind of the breather coming up, because they go to Oxford, they get Tennessee and Gainesville,
they do,
and they still have Florida State down the road.
That's right.
Who may have gotten right a little bit against Wake Forest over the weekend. So, Billy Gonzalez, say this for him, he's going to get the full experience as the former interim head coach. He's going to see Georgia. He's going to see Tennessee. He's going to see Florida State.
Man,
and, really? You know, that's before, again, we talk about Ole Miss and, and this game against Kentucky. Boy, you know, Kentucky offensively, and give Auburn credit. Auburn's legit defensively, but
they really are.
Bad football.
Yeah, it really is.
Both those offenses. But you wanted to think maybe Cutter Bowley after that really, really – explosive type performance against Tennessee the previous week. Yeah. You want to think, hey, maybe this guy's turning a corner, but that was tough to watch against Auburn last Saturday night. I guess I like Florida on the road. I wouldn't tell anybody to touch this with a 10-foot pole. whatever the total is, maybe just take the under.
Yeah.
But boy, picking one of these teams in this game, good luck with that. Do so at your own risk. All right, Brent, that's our lineup in the Southeastern Conference for the upcoming Saturday. Anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here on a Tuesday night? Once again, we appreciate everybody jumping on board with us live here on Ryer on YouTube. Hit that thumbs up. Hit a like for us. That would help us out. Subscribe to Ryer on YouTube, and you'll get all this great stuff from Brent Beer. Brent, what else you have?
Yeah, a couple of things. Oklahoma is off. And this is a team that still is trying to position itself for a lot better things too. They've got a bye before Alabama and Missouri. I think the team I wanted to talk about was South Carolina a little bit.
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you one thing, Trav. What do you do there? Is my question. And they fired Mike Shula, and which is really sad to see. I mean, we could throw a lot of stats at people about the Carolina offense. I mean, it's 19 points per game, the worst since 2002, frankly. So that they are really struggling at 3-6. Trev, and you may differ, I don't think he's going to lose his job. I think people really thought this team would be a lot better than it is, particularly when you've got one of the better quarterbacks in the league. But I mean, you know, you're almost out of adjectives for South Carolina at this point, and how they could try to finish the season on a better note.
What we don't know is exactly how extensive the domino effect's going to be in this market either. I would say this about Shane Beamer. I don't think jumping to jobs that aren't clearly steps up, and even some that are a step up, is going to be as appealing as it's been in the past. Because you are, if you're making a move to wherever, I don't care where you're going, you are starting over from zero, like with your roster. You're starting over.
Sure.
And I know you can look at that and say, well, you get to hit the portal too. But I think part of the allure in the past about even taking, you know, one step up, if not two, three or four steps up in the job market, was that there was the attraction of a roster that you were going to assume. You know, you would probably, as a head coach candidate, look at a roster and say, you know what, I like this. They've got, you know, they got 50 underclassmen that we know very well from the recruiting process that we all wanted to have in our program. You're not looking at it from that perspective anymore. You're looking at it like, what's the NIL set up? And, you know, do I want to start over?
That's
really what you're doing. I think Beamer could be one of those guys, though. I think there's going to be some crazy stuff before this is all said and done.
I would agree.
I don't know if exactly how it's going to play out, but what if Drink goes to Florida or Penn State and Shane Beamer goes from one Columbia to the other? There's the potential for that type of stuff. And I know Missouri fans probably hear that and go, no, they don't want to hear that. I'm just saying things like that. You know, I think they're not so much because coaches are looking to jump, but in a situation like Shane Beamer's with where you're at right now, do you want to sit around or stay with it for another year and COLA and see what happens? Or do you go somewhere else now? And though you've got at least a 3 or 4 year run, maybe before you're really, really put under the microscope.
And Trev, one last one for us, Tennessee. The Vols are off. They are struggling. And with the schedule, you know, they could New Mexico State, Florida, and a ending game with Vanderbilt. Now, the Vanderbilt game's at home, but my now look, I know he's under a lot of criticism. I think the staff, I don't think they make a move. I mean, why would you do that? But I know they're not real happy with it. And we appreciate from China Grove, Alabama.
Yeah, how about that?
I enjoyed that. China Grove mentioned by the Doobie Brothers and their song, by the way.
China Grove, absolutely.
But I'm curious your thoughts on Tennessee. This has not been the year they wanted, but I think it's kind of the year you and I expected them to have. And Trev, my thing with them is they really need to beat Vanderbilt. If they don't, this is one of those years to where I don't think you want to end your season losing to the Commodores.
No, and I think how it plays out will. I don't see Josh Heupel being in any trouble.
No, I don't either.
I wonder about his staff though. Tim Banks is a highly regarded guy as a defensive coordinator, but it hasn't been great this year. I thought it was more about the offense turning the ball over against Oklahoma last week. Mm-hmm. A lot of good work went right down the drain. Not Tim Banks' fault that the offense, puts it on the ground, gives up a scoop and score when it looks like everything is going in Tennessee's favor in that game. I would be interested to kind of see. I don't think offensively there'll be any major changes there. Mm-hmm. I would wonder about Banks. Yeah. And I don't think Tim Banks would have a hard time finding his next gig if that were the case. I think he's worked at Penn State in the past. Who knows? For Tennessee, it's three losses now. You're looking at one of the Florida Bowls, maybe Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando. But a chance to get to 9-3, maybe win 10 games at the bowl game. And as you said, that Vanderbilt game still means something to those folks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, no doubt about that.
All right, Brent, always a lot of fun with you here on Ryer on YouTube on Second Helping. Another big weekend of SEC football is upon us, and we will be back next week to recap and preview the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Brent, take care of yourself. We'll catch up again next week.
You too, brother, and hope the family's doing well. And Trey, before we go, give us a 30-second Pops report. How about that?
I'm going on the road with Pops this weekend. Oh, I'm going up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin with Pops.
Yes.
Yeah, we're gonna go see one of his granddaughters. We're gonna check out a couple of NBA games. We're supposed to go to the Packer game next Monday night against the Philadelphia Eagles at Lambeau, but that weather.
Yes.
Yeah, Lambeau. It's looking like game time temperatures around 30 degrees. Around 20. We'll have to see if we can get Pops. Pops will go, though. Pops will be down. Yeah. It's probably more me than Pops.
Yeah, I understand.
Pops is doing well, but we're going to travel with him this weekend. So that'll, he's what I call technologically deceased.
Yeah.
That's how I refer to people who just won't do anything with technology.
Yeah.
He's not going to do it. So these kiosks and these airports, things you do with your phone now, that's all going to be on me.
Yeah.
So,
really?
Yeah. It's going to be something else. No doubt about it. All right, Brent, talk to you next week.
Okay, brother. Take care.
For Brent Beard, I'm Travis Ryer. Thank you so much for jumping on board with us here live on a Tuesday night. And until next time, so long, everybody.